Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Neil Haley Show. And we're working again with my co-host, Juan Aliman of the 80s Hour Podcast. Juan, how are you, man? What's going
I'm
on?
I'm doing great. Had a great weekend. So how are you?
I'm doing great. And I know you're excited about our guest, especially how she's really big time 80s for sure. So go ahead and introduce our guest.
Oh, most definitely. When you told me, I got super excited. And I did all this research because I wanted to have some good questions for her. But today we're interviewing a lead singer of Missing Persons, Dale Bozzio. How are you today, Dale?
Hey, thank you very much. It's very nice to be here and to have your time to chat today. Thank you.
Yes.
I'm great. Super good.
Have an interesting career. You have a long, very long career. Between acting, writing music, singing music, performing in tours around the world, and everything that you've done. What made you know that this was for you? At the very beginning, because you went to school to study drama. But from what I found out, you didn't like it that much. So what made you go into music? What made you decide that avenue?
Well, it was all Frank Zappa. I didn't really want to be a singer. I didn't think that I did anyway, not at the time. I love it now, of course. I'm enthralled and so grateful that I have the pipes. But it was all because of Frank. I ran into Frank Zappa, and I had gone to California to work for Hugh Hefner at the mansion, and I was expecting to move in. But when I got there, he did not come downstairs to talk to me, and he acted really strange. He was waving me upstairs with his pipe. So I left and ended up running into Frank Zappa that day. And Frank asked me to be this girl, Mary, on Joe's Garage, which now is infamous, but
I know.
I said, Frank, I don't know how to sing. I came to Hollywood to be a movie star. And he just cracked up laughing. He started laughing hysterically. And he looked at me in this, awkward way, and I knew he believed me. That was the real funny part of it. He believed me because I was really serious. I wanted to be a movie star, and then that didn't work out. So he thought that was just the funniest thing ever, and it went on from there. That was my relationship with Frank. I would crack jokes. And Frank would laugh.
So interesting when you talk about Dale, about Frank and stuff. Would you say he really was such a big integral part of you in your career in a lot of ways?
Oh yeah, absolutely. He was the string really that thread me together, and in such a strange way, because when I met Frank, I wasn't thinking anything, about Frank. I just loved him and wanted to say hello to him. I never thought, oh yeah, I gotta go meet Frank. I gotta go be in Frank's band. No, that was not on my mind. It was just a matter of reflecting his music. And other than that, one step led to another with me being in the Joe's Garage, and then I had a really tragic accident. I was only in LA for 6 months. I was 21 years old. I made that record with Frank and sang "I Don't Want to Get Drafted" with Frank. and then pretty much I had a terrible accident. I was only in LA for 6 months. I was 21 years old, and then I fell out a window 40 feet. And I woke up and I was in Frank's living room and I was slipping in and out of a coma, but Frank's wife, Gail, took me in And I had fallen 40 feet out of a window, split my head open and cracked my ribs and my kneecaps. So I was pretty out of it for a while. And it took me a long time to recover. So it was Frank every time that, and then I woke up. He sort of strung me together, because then I woke up back and I was in Boston. I had got off life support machine and all this stuff, addicted to morphine and what have you. And Frank ends up in Boston playing a concert. And Terry called me at my home with my mom and told me, you know, Frank was going to be there and that they'd come over and visit me after the concert. So I'm like, I kind of somehow don't think that Frank's going to come to my house in Medford and visit me right now. So make a long story short, I thought, okay, I guess I better go to the concert or I'll probably never get to see Terry and Frank Zappa again. And this was in, I believe it was in 77. And then Frank said, okay, I'm picking you up tomorrow and we're going to Europe and you're going to come with us on this European tour. So I went on tour with Frank just as a person, you know, just along for the ride with Terry. And of course, because I made Frank laugh, and believe me, Frank didn't allow just anybody along with him on a tour, especially of Europe. So I had to be on my best behavior. And all the whole time, he just looked at us like there was something going on, you know. He was so inspiring between Terry and I, and he did push me to be next to Terry quite a bit. Even after we were divorced, he said, you know, you should get back with Terry again, see if you can put the marriage back together. Like, I don't think it's up to me, Frank. And so we never got back together, but we did end up making Bing Fish together with Frank once again. And I just continued to sing or be professing my voice, because that's where Frank led me and it stayed with me.
Okay. Now, you met Terry with Frank, and then in 80 you started Missing Persons. Was there anyone else in Missing Persons that worked with Frank, or how did you meet everyone? How did everyone come together to make such a great band?
Well, Patrick O'Hearn, the bass player, he worked with Frank as well, and so did Chuck Wild. He worked with Frank for a minute too, and Terry Bozio was with Frank, and then Warren Cucurullo was with Frank, and I made records with Frank, but never went on tour with Frank. I never went on stage with Frank. And so Frank turned to us one day and said, you should put a band together, call it the Cute Persons. And me, Terry, and Warren looked at each other and went, I don't know about cute, but so they came home one day and said, okay, we got it. We'll be the Missing Persons. We're missing from Frank. And that's what we decided on. And Warren was at the time playing with Frank, and he actually, you know, stopped playing with Frank and started playing with me and Terry. And we didn't have anything. We had nothing. We started from scratch.
Wow. So did you think that the Missing Persons, when you formed the band, would be something that was have the success it did?
Well, yes, part of me did, because I was reaching for the moon, as I do. I have high hopes. And so, yes, I'm very grateful that it did work out this way. About the 80s thing, I never really thought about that much. So, you know, in the 80s, when we did try to get these record deals from even including David Geffen, they would send me a rejection letter back saying, this is not the direction of the music, the 1980s. And I would just sit there and laugh and rip off these letters. I should have saved them, but I didn't. I like just ripped them to shreds, to the tiniest little pieces I could. Afterwards, they sent me a letter too. And I said, oh, this is it. I'm calling the president and I'm telling him they made a big mistake. And I think, and I called the president of Capitol Records and said, I'm inviting you firsthand to come to my concert. We just sold out the Santa Monica Civic. And I know because I sold it without a record deal, without anything. You have to see and hear Missing Persons. And he came to the show. And as soon as the show was over, he said, he called me over and he said, Dale, I just want to tell you, you have a record deal. I'll see you tomorrow in my office. And that was the way, that's how it started. And that gave me so much ammunition in my prowess to just go further and further and further. And every step I took with Missing Persons, I pushed it a little bit over the edge because I knew I was being supported by geniuses. Geniuses. Terry Bozzio, Patrick O'Hearn, Warren Cucullo, Frank Zappa, who gave us his studio, brand new studio, said, go get Ken Scott, who just finished doing the production of Let's Dance by David Bowie, and get Ken Scott, come in here, use our brand new Kurzweil. I mean, come on, this is back in 79, so we're going back a while, right? There were recording studios, and you had to do this from the beginning to the end. There wasn't, you know, turn on the computer, baloney. So we really went to work, and Frank said, use my studio, take it over, get it done. I'll see you when I come back in a few days from New York, and I'll listen to it. And we did, and we did, and we took this very seriously and to heart. And those songs are hits today. And those songs went on from Frank's studio that he gave us for free that day, that weekend, and for his whole life, what he gave us. He gave us the stage. He shared his whole support system with Terry Warren and I. We need to visit his grave on a regular basis, Terry Warren and I, and meet there. But they won't. I've asked them before to meet me there, but they won't, and they don't. I'm much more compassionate than my fellow friends. And I'll keep it that way because it floats my boat. I love to be in remembering of the ones I love. And that's one of my greatest loves is Frank. And he was only my friend. He kissed me on the forehead 3 times in my life. He kissed my son, Shane, on the forehead when he was 1 year old. He stopped the 27-piece harmonic orchestra to come and kiss him on the forehead and sing him happy birthday that day. It blew my mind.
Wow.
He was only my friend. He was only my friend. That was it. And I know he loved me. I know he loved me as a human being. And he was the only person I know that could uncommittingly love you. Really, really. So I admire his children. And, you know, I wish them great, great wellness and peace of mind, knowing that their father was such an incredible genius.
That's a beautiful sentiment right there, Dale. After Missing Persons, because we talked a bit about Missing Persons, but you had a solo album called Riot in English that you did on the Paisley Park album, on the Paisley Park label. What was it like working with Prince?
You know, I didn't work with Prince. That's the thing.
Wow.
We had a love affair, but we didn't work together. He wrote a song for me. I've never been to Paisley Park. He wrote a song for me called So Strong. It's really beautiful. It's on Riot in English. But I never went to Paisley. He never worked on my records. He didn't sing on my records or play on my records or anything. He gave me his engineer, Coke, and all his guitars and his drums over at the studio, Sunset Sound. And I went in there for a couple of days and made my first song, Simon, Simon. And then I continued to record there. And he loved it. He jumped up and down. He made a big giant billboard that said Dale Bozzio for president. And he loved it. He loved it. And he loved me. I know he did. He was, you know, he was a sensitive kind of guy. And so he did have a bit of a attitude or some sort or something. Very delicate, very delicate guy. I know the world loves him, you know, and me too. So, and his music is historic. I mean, there's not much you can say bad about him. You know, he's had his loves of life and such, and so. But you know, man is not really measured by his money or women, or are they? I don't know.
So how did you first meet Prince?
Well, I went to this place called Tramps. It was a club at the Beverly Center in Los Angeles. It was big, you know, really hot new club, dancing place. And my friend Jamie Shoup was my manager, and his manager, and some other people's managers, as a matter of fact. She was with Cavallo, Ruffalo, and Fagnoli, and they managed Prince. And she said, if you one of these nights go with this club, Tramps, I guarantee you're going to run into Prince. And I said, oh, okay, sure, fine. And I had happened to have a membership there with my friend Philip Ehrlich already. So I had heard that he was frolicking there. And so it was just kind of one of the same old nights, you know, got dressed up, went Saturday night, go to Tramps, like midnight. So I walked into Tramps with all my friends. And there I saw Prince standing over by the side, and with two big giant bodyguards. He was by himself. I just straight over to him. I poked him on the nose, and his bodyguards lurched at me, and he said, it's all right. And he said, you just poked me on the nose. I said, I did, because I wanted to get your attention. I was gonna ask you to dance, but I didn't think you'd answer me. So do you want to? He just did like a 360 turnaround, like one of his like little steps, and went to where the music was playing, which I knew was the dance floor. And what did they flip on? The little red Corvette, right? Okay.
Oh, wow.
So all like, you know, cliche is this. And then immediately he couldn't dance to it. He was like, he couldn't do it. You know, it was someone else's song on before that, like Cameo or something. And he was all ready to get up and just be a regular dancing person. But as soon as they flipped it onto his song, he walked off the stage. He walked off the dance floor. And I followed him, and we sat down, and we said, do you want something to drink? I said, yes, please. Champagne. Champagne came right over. He leaned over to me, and he said, do you have a car? I said, I do have a car. He said, what kind of a car do you have? I said, I have a red Corvette. And he said, okay, will you take me for a ride? I said, yeah, I'll take you for a ride. He said, now? I said, absolutely. So we barely touched the champagne. I had like one sip of champagne. I wasn't drunk or anything, but I was pretty high on cocaine, that's for sure. So we go out and get my car, and he comes around and follows me in this limousine, jumps on the limousine, and gets in my drive in the passenger side. And he says, could you drive me really fast now? I looked at him and I said, you talking to me? I will definitely drive you really fast. And I just stepped on it. I was at the corner. I don't know if you know California much, but it was about, I don't know, a couple of miles. I went down the road. I was almost at 120, and he screamed, stop, at the top of his lungs. Literally, he got scared. I finally scared him. I wasn't going to stop because I loved the speed at the time. I mean, I'm the first one to say, what did you want to be when you grew up? A drag racer, a race car driver, you know, like, so I love Cars anyway. I really love Cars.
So, okay, now there is something that I've read about you.
That's how I met him.
Okay. Now, there's something I read about you being called the original Lady Gaga or Gwen Stefani or whatever, you know, someone who came after you. What do you feel about, you know, that when somebody says you're the original and, you know, then they say a name like Lady Gaga or Gwen Stefani or...
I don't understand those compliments. I find them as compliments. I don't find anybody that copies anything to be strange. I think that's a very nice compliment, and that's all good. Yeah.
That's beautiful. Now, you do have coming out now, your biography, your autobiography, Life is So Strange, Missing Persons, Frank Zappa, Prince, and Beyond. Can you tell us a bit about that?
Well, that's a lot of what I just told you is pretty much, you know, and I do have a lot of poems here in the book. I dedicate them to a couple of people. One is to Warren and one is to Frank Zappa, and really endearing to me. And I have a chapter in there that says all about my loves and lost, loved and lost, as they would say. And I had a lot of very nice dates and friends and loves on the way. I was in love with Jackie Jackson for quite a long time, and some crazy stuff happened with his family that I really had to separate myself from him. So I write a little bit about that. And then I write about, well, of course, Prince, my relationship with him. I write about that too. I have quite a bit about Prince because I felt his spirit in a real different way. And I think that that needs to be respected as long as well as all the women that spend time with him and his musicians. You know, it's just, you have to respect that loyalty because it takes a lot of patience. And when you work for someone else in the music business, it's not your own thing. You know, you got to do it their way. And that's not very natural to you in general. Right. So I was able to be gifted enough to have do my own music, you know, as well. When Prince gave me that deal, that record deal, and as I say, I just wanted to recap that he had written a song called "Balmy," called "So Strong," and it's such a beautiful song. It's the melody is just, it makes you cry. And I listened to it when he passed away, and I realized he wrote the song about me. The whole time I was thinking he wrote it about himself when I'm singing it, thinking, wow, so I didn't sing it. So, you know, I don't know. I just had an edge about me when I sang it because I thought, you know, this guy's got a lot of balls singing this song about him. And then I realized when I really opened my mind that he was talking about me.
Wow. So powerful stuff for sure in your book. And where's the best place we can purchase it and stuff? Where can we go?
Oh, well, you know, I have a lot of friends on the Facebook. So I'm on there, facebook.com/ Dale Bozzio, and I have the books. I can send autographed to you or your friends, whatever it is, and then, you know, some records and the 8x10s, you know, like rock stars do. You know, I have that going on. A little bit modern. You know.
Are you still performing? Are you doing any performing?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yes, yes, yes. I just played 3 shows this week for my birthday. Me and my son, we have the same birthday, March 2nd. So I played a few shows this week at the Canyon Clubs, and I'm going to play at the Whiskey in June out here in California. And I have a tour with the Lost 80s, probably all the way to New York, Florida, Boston. Going to go a lot of places this year. Because I say, you know, why not? Why not now that everything's a little bit eased up on the people and things are better in the world? We'll continue to get better.
Absolutely. And Juan, best place we can find info on you?
Best place to find info on me is PicturePerfectPodcasts.com. And you can see both my shows on there. You can go to my Shopify page if you're interested in any merchandise, and also learning about me or sending me an email about anything that you might have heard or with suggestions for a show.
All right, fantastic. You know, Dale, I tell you, the stories that you've been able to tell, you people got to purchase the book. You just gave us snapshots of what to expect reading your book. And I think the thing that also is interesting, you talked about the drug issues that you had in the 80s. How long did it take you to beat that, especially the cocaine and stuff?
You know, it was so easy to take drugs in the 80s. You didn't even have to buy it, you know? People just had drugs. It wasn't like now. And everything was so, corporate maybe, you know? Like, really, everything's out of control. Weed is legal, but you got to pay taxes beyond belief. I could have bought a house with the amount of taxes you pay. You know,
yeah.
I mean, it's insane. So I don't know. One, you know, does one hand wash the other? So the drugs were heavy, and so was liquor, you know. And I was a Playboy bunny at 18 years old. What do you think I was doing? I was drinking cognac, okay? I was drinking cognac since I'm 18. No way, Jose. When I met Frank and he had Napoleon the 18th for us for New Year's Eve, oh, forget about it.
Oh, wow. All right. Well, there's lots of stories to tell for sure. People need to purchase your book. I appreciate you. I appreciate Juan. And thanks, guys, for coming on again on the show.
You're so great.
Belated happy birthday, Dale.
You guys, I love you so much.
All right. God take care, Dale. You. Thanks for coming
All
on.
Right.
All right. You're God listening and watching The Neil Haley Show. And we'll be back in just a moment.